Into the Badlands.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. We're back, another season recap podcast here for you. We're going to be talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I am joined by, once again,
as Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
Greg Ehrenberg of Basketball Monster. Greg, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah. So actually, I'm pretty excited to talk about the Thunder because this is a pretty interesting offseason for them. A lot could change, and that big three from last year wasn't much of a big three.
It was a very mediocre three. Maybe it was a big two and a minus one. I don't know how. Unless you want to put Steven Adams in the three, because then he was clearly their. He was clearly the third best player on this team, not Carmelo Anthony. There's a lot of stuff to talk about with this team. We don't have to talk draft picks because they have two, and it's pick 53 and 57. So I wouldn't be expecting too much to happen there. But free agency is where the real interesting things are. Carmelo Anthony has a $28 million player option that you would assume he would pick up because nobody is paying him $28 million for next season, while Paul George has a $21 million player option, which he will undoubtedly decline. There is zero doubt about that, and he will enter the offseason as an unrestricted free agent with plenty of suitors all around, and I'd say his chances of returning to OKC are probably less than 50% at this point.
I think that's very fair. I think I would probably say that they're probably closer to 30% even than 50%, just because there are so many teams with cap space that are going to be vying for his services. And the other thing, too, is the Thunder season was so massively disappointing last year that I don't really know how much desires are you going to have to go back to that situation. And I don't know how much something like this contributes, but Russell Westbrook does not seem like a player who's a ton of fun to play with. And if Paul George goes there, he's obviously committed to playing with Westbrook for basically the entirety of his prime, because Westbrook also signed the 5-year max contract extension.
Yeah, Westbrook's got, in 2021-22, Westbrook's going to be paid $44 million, which is going to be just he's got a $47 million player option in 22-23. That is a large, large amount of money. But we'll talk to that about that when we get into the 2022-23 season. Other unrestricted free agents on this team is Josh Huestis, who they declined his rookie option. Corey Brewer, Fatface Raymond Felton, and Jeremy Grant are all unrestricted free agents. And then they've got PJ Dozier and Daniel Hamilton. They're two two-way guys who are both restricted free agents. I guess Jeremy Grant is the priority there. Corey Brewer gave them some solid minutes, but he is not the answer on the wing. He was just filling in space for Andre Roberson to come back. Huestis played some okay minutes, but again, not a high priority guy. Grant is going to be the one that they are going to want to bring back in that situation, and it's going to cost a lot more than the $1.5 million that he was on last season in order to do that. So that'll be interesting to see. He wants to come back to OKC. He seems to think that he will, but there's plenty of water to go under the bridge before we hear about that. The Thunder finished last season with a 48-34 record, 2 wins below their expected win-loss, 17th in pace, the 7th best offense, and the 9th best defense. And they were 4th in the NBA in the Western Conference. So you can look, with a top 10 offense and top 10 defense, you would expect them to be a little bit better than a first round playoff exit. And that's why, again, and their expected win loss of 50, and they went under it. Given how well their offense and defense played, they should have had a better overall result than what they ended up having. They were the number one offensive rebounding team, and number one in the league in generating turnovers, two things that obviously able to help them in large part there due to Steven Adams with that offensive rebounding ability that he does possess, and we see that happen with him all of the time. Let's have a guessing game, Greg. Who do you think had the best offensive rating on this team out of the players who were significant parts of the rotation?
Well, I could eliminate Carmelo Anthony right away.
Yep.
I would guess that it was Paul George. I think that he was the best offensive player for the team last year, but I don't think that's who it's going to be. Who was it?
It was Steven Adams that had the best offensive rating on this team, and that's not the be-all and end-all of everything, but he had a 125. Paul George was 112. In terms of worst offensive rating, Josh Huestis had a 91, and then next worst was Carmelo Anthony, as you so gracefully put it. Best defensive rating on this team?
It was probably Steven Adams.
It was Russell Westbrook, which surprised me as well there. While Terry Ferguson had the worst defensive rating on the team, just ahead of Alex Abrines, but I don't think too many people would be surprised by those results. Let's talk Westbrook, who was the number one or number two fantasy player the year before and struggled this season, still averaged a triple-double, 25, 10, and 10, but saw the scoring drop, the three-pointers drop significantly. He averaged 25, 10, 10, 1.2 threes, 1.9 steals, 0.3 blocks, 45 from the field, and 74 from the free throw line with under 30% from three on four attempts per game. What the hell do we make of this season Westbrook had? Because he still averaged a triple-double, and overall, you'd say it was disappointing.
Yeah, it's weird because coming into this year, I thought that the counting stats were going to go down for him. I thought the efficiency was going to go up. The usage was down a little bit to start the year, and then it picked up as the year went on when Westbrook decided, screw this, we're not winning, I'm doing everything myself. And yeah, it was a disappointing season. It's hard to say exactly why it was disappointing. I guess overall it was just because the team wasn't as good as the majority of people thought they were going to be. But I think the other thing with Westbrook is the numbers are great from a fantasy perspective. There's just something about his game where he seems to limit the abilities of all the people around him. And I think one of the things about a really, truly great player is they elevate the guys around them. Like LeBron, a lot of times we've seen him make the guys around him just better players. Whereas if you look at what Westbrook's done to guys like Paul George or Victor Oladipo the year before, or Sabonis, who was a total zero for the Thunder and then was much better after he left. For whatever reason, he seems to bring out the worst in the guys who are playing around him.
The weirdest thing, like the efficiency did go up from the field. He went from 42.5% to 44.5%. That's fine. His three-point percentage went back to basically his career numbers. Now, in his MVP year, he shot 34% from three and hit 2.5 per game. But the 2 years prior to that, he was under 30% and he was back to that same level. So just back to being the same terrible 3-point shooter that he had been, but a 10 percentage point drop in his free throw percentage from 84.5 down to 74.3 is a massive, massive dip. And on the number of attempts that he was taking, 7 attempts per game, when you're coming in at 74%, which is below league average, you're actually hurting your fantasy team in that category. And while it wasn't a punt type situation, he was negative 0.91 in his Z score in that category. Early in the season, he was shooting at like 65 or 66% where he was a punt guy. And it really is a weird scenario. He took 3 attempts fewer per game from the line and hit them at 10% less. That's an extra 2 or 3 points almost right there for him that could have pushed him back to that 27, maybe 28 points. And then he does become the 7th or 8th best player in the league if that free throw percentage is back up. So just really inexplicable stuff. And again, not always. It's something I've started to think about now is that free throw percentage, when people have these big dips, it's a mental thing, but it's not, it's a mental thing in terms of them being unhappy. And we saw it with quite a few different players where they're just not comfortable with certain things in their personal life, their playing situation. And you get the feeling that maybe this is the case with Westbrook. Was he just unhappy with the way the team was meshing together? Was it the change in free throw routine? But there's all these things when people have these. Victor Oladipo had a 10% free throw drop last season in Oklahoma City, and he wasn't exactly happy there. These sort of things do happen at weird levels. Andrew Wiggins in Minnesota, we hear the rumblings of him coming out of being disappointed this season. He had a massive free throw percentage drop. So I think there's something to look at with that. I need to look into it a little bit further, but it definitely was a weird season for Westbrook. And if that jumps back up to 80%, then if you're picking at the end of the first round and he's available there, then you do have to consider it, because there is room for him to grow. Of course, he does hurt your field goal percentage, not as much as maybe some people might necessarily think. And turnovers are obviously a write-off, but I write them off anyway, so that doesn't bother me in the slightest. Paul George, Greg. He's turned 28. He played 79 games, 37 minutes, 22, 5.5, and 3.5. 3 triples, 2 steals, 43, 82, 40% from 3. The 16th ranked player overall. That's pretty bloody good. I can't really fault too much about Paul George's season. He was a player that was picked ADP of 17, finished the season 16th. Pretty much, you know, what you sort of expected. He was the 16th ranked player the year before, 14th the year before that. Yeah, sort of the same stuff.
Yeah, it's really hard to know what to make of his fantasy value for next year, obviously, because we don't know where he's going to play. If he's going to go to a spot where he's going to be the main facilitator of the offense, if he's going to be away from Russell Westbrook, maybe he goes to a place like the Lakers where he's going to have a lot higher of a usage rating, then I think we could potentially see him back in the mix as a top 12 or so fantasy player where we'd consider taking him at the end of the first round, but probably not the case if he goes back to OKC. So what ends up happening with him next year is very dependent on his situation. So outside of the Thunder and the Lakers, do you think there's any other team that he's highly likely to go to? And do you think the Lakers are the favorite to land Paul George?
Yeah, I think the Lakers are the favorite. I think the Sixers are an option for him as well. But apart from that, I'm not sure there's many. It's probably those three teams that I'll be looking at. Maybe the Clippers get in the mix there. That'd be about it, I would think. But it's weird with George is that this season before, he had a usage of 29% when he was the only guy really in Indiana doing it. And he was still the 16th ranked player. He averaged 1.6 extra points per game. And the big change in what the difference was this season was he shot worse from the field with better teammates around him. So that's an interesting thing. And he was able to focus more defensively this year and got his steals up to 2.0 per game when he was at 1.6 last season. So will that, if he goes to a team where he does get that extra 3-4 percentage point usage bump, does that take his focus away from defense a bit more and then the steals drop back down to 1.5, 1.7 and yeah, balance out again that number where maybe he scores 24 points, but he still ends up being the 15th or 16th best player? That they're all things that I think are realistic possibilities for things that can happen for him next season.
Yeah, and massive numbers from this year when Russell Westbrook was off the floor. He actually had a 38% usage rating without Westbrook on the court, 28 points per 36 minutes, almost 6 rebounds, a little over 4 assists. So let's see what situation he winds up at. And I think Paul George is somebody who I could see myself being pretty high on going into next year.
I think that if he does go somewhere like the Lakers, that he might be at risk of getting overdrafted. People might be looking to jump him ahead. I could easily see this scenario of people taking him ahead of, say, Kawhi Leonard, taking him ahead of Nikola Jokic, guys like that at the end of the first round, and that there could be a risk involved in that. Not a massive one because he's not going to slide hugely down, but there is that chance that happens. Now, the other guy who took a step forward for this team and did improve was Steve-O Adams. He was the 67th ranked player for the season. He's still only 24. Greg, I think people would be a little bit surprised at that considering how hairy he is. 76 games, 33 minutes, 14-9, 1.2 steals, a block, 63% from the field, but he is really in that punt free throw territory, 56% on 4 attempts. Makes it really tough to come back from that, but overall, for what he does, he is a value player, and in a punt free throw build, he's a top 50 sort of a guy with the rebounding, with that very high field goal percentage, which jumped up 5 percentage points this season, and the increase in scoring. The only thing he doesn't do as a center, which you'd like more of, is block shots, and I don't really see, from what we've seen from him in his career, I don't really see that changing too much.
One thing that I think is kind of an interesting narrative on Steven Adams that I've seen on Twitter from some Thunder beat reporters.
Oh, are you going to talk about him shooting threes?
Yes, the corner three. I would not be surprised if he adds that to his game next year. There's been a lot of beat reporters taking videos of him shooting the corner three, and it looks not terrible. If Adams is going to be able to make half a three or so per game and not have it totally tank his field goal percentage, that's a pretty interesting fantasy player.
Yeah, the three-pointer, I do think it's coming. I don't think he's going to be hitting one per game, but attempting one per game, maybe getting you 0.3, 0.4 made for three-pointers per game. That's a possibility. Yet, how much does it affect the field goal percentage? Does he dip from 63 back to 58? Does it even get worse and go to 55? Like, that's the concern. And that bump down in field goal percentage would not be offset by that small three-point increase, and that could cost you 15, 20 spots of ranking value. So that is a real concern, but also a boon. Because if you can come in and hit, take only corner threes and hit them at 40%, then you're feeling pretty good about what he's doing. But there is that concern that when that is such a massive part, and that is, you talk about Z-score values, he's a 2.54 in his field goal percentage this season. That is huge. That is taking up by far the biggest portion of his value. The next highest area is rebounds at 1.2. So over double the value from field goal percentage than rebounds. And if that drops, and drops significantly, That is somewhat of a concern for where his value could go, even though it might actually benefit this team more in the long run. It is something for us to pay some attention to. So I'm glad you did bring that up. Let's talk about Carmelo Anthony. He was poor this season. I might even say piss poor. He was the 133rd ranked player who was drafted at pick 46. That pick at 46 never really made too much sense. Once he was traded to OKC, 32 minutes, 16 points, 2 threes, 6 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 0.6 steals, 0.6 blocks, but it's the inefficiency. 40 from the field, 76 from the line, 36 from 3 for a true shooting of 50. He's really, really poor for Carmelo Anthony. He's lost. He shouldn't be playing 34 minutes per game. Shouldn't be playing 32 minutes per game at the age of 34. I assume he's back on this team. But the other thing we have to take into consideration, Greg, is if Paul George goes and Melo opts in, does he see his usage rise even further? He was at 23% last year. Does he go back to 28% and just bludgeon his way into another 18-point scoring type season, and that actually then has fantasy value?
Yeah, well, if we look at Melo's numbers with Paul George off the court this year, his usage rating did go up to 29%. His efficiency was still totally crap, which I was surprised by. I thought that going from the Knicks situation where there was just no other decent players he was playing with, I thought that we would just see a big drop in his usage, but I thought that he'd be fairly efficient last year. He just really sucked. Like, he was so underwhelming as a player last year, and it was so much worse than anything I could have possibly imagined he was going to be. So I don't know what to make of him, because the numbers can't go down from what they were last year. There's no way that he's going to shoot lower than 40% from the field. So I think that there is a chance for a rebound from him, but I do think that this is a spot where, due to the name value, I could see him getting overdrafted in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, because a lot of people will have that thought if Paul George goes, oh, Melo's going to get back, he's going to get the scoring back, the efficiency, and all that's true, but there is still that risk of being overdrafted. His defense was atrocious all season, and he really should have been benched long ago before he saw his minutes reduced against the Jazz for Jeremy Grant, who was outplaying him. But there is an opportunity for a bounce back next season. So just bear that in mind, depending on what happens with Paul George. It's weird that both he and Paul George saw their efficiency drop this season, even though they're playing alongside better players. So that's a bit of a weird anomaly that we didn't anticipate being the case. Outside of those four guys, this team is just bereft of fantasy value. There's just nobody around. Andre Robertson was the next highest ranked player, and he's a nothing in fantasy. 207th for the season, suffered that season-ending knee injury after 39 games. 27 minutes, 5 points. What he is a pretty good rebounding shooting guard, 5 rebounds, 1.2 steals, and 0.9 blocks on 54% shooting. And another one of those guys that cannot shoot, but knows which shots to take, like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and therefore hits them at a high percentage. 32% from the free throw line is obviously absolutely horrendous, but he's very, very, he's going there very, very infrequently. So it's not as big of a deficit as what it is in other areas. But if you're looking for a guard to give you rebounds, steals, and blocks, Robertson probably will play more than the 27 minutes per game he played last season and can still contribute that. But there's just no hope for him offensively, really, is there?
No, and it's definitely, the injury is a concern because it's a pretty significant one.
Yep.
So if he's going to come back and lose some of his athleticism that he had, he's not going to be worse on offense than he was, but if he's going to lose a step to the point where he's going to be a little bit worse on defense, then he's a totally just non-playable player for the Thunder, which I just think if Paul George leaves, it's such a big issue for the team. They have no depth. They have nobody else to turn to. This could be a pretty underwhelming team.
Jeremy Grant, If he returns to this team and George leaves, I think that they would look to start Mallow and Grant at the 3 and 4, which, you know, it could be a disaster either way. Like, Mallow defensively at the 3 is a nightmare, but playing Jeremy Grant as a 3 is not great for offense. He still, you know, he's starting to take threes, but still can't hit them. Just 29%, 8.5 points, 4 rebounds, a block per game and half a steal on 54% overall shooting. I just don't see where Grant, who was the 241st ranked player this season, where does he actually improve outside of extra minutes to become a guy that might be a fantasy guy? He looks good, highlight blocks, highlight dunks, but overall the inefficiency, the lack of ability to score, that probably the subpar rebounding as well, it just really does leave me wanting more from him as a fantasy contributor outside of being a deep league guy or a streamer for blocks. That's pretty much where I see him being as we move forward.
Yeah, I kind of like Grant as a backup center from a real life basketball perspective. But from fantasy, there's not really a lot to see there. He hurts you in way too many categories and doesn't really help anywhere. So he's probably not going to be draftable anywhere.
There is an opportunity potentially for someone on this team if George does leave. Terrence Ferguson was their first round draft choice in the 2017 NBA draft. He just turned 20, so we're talking about a really young player here. Averaged only 3 points and shot 41 and 33% from the field and 3 respectively. Did pretty much absolutely nothing apart from score, but started a few games, showed an ability to hit threes in bunches at times. And a guy who's going to be heading into his second season, there is going to be a potential opportunity for someone there on the wing, whether it's at the 2 or the 3, depending on how they do Robertson, for him to step into a larger role. But overall, I don't really like his fantasy prospects. The 0.8 rebounds he averaged, no assists, no steals, no blocks. Doesn't get to the line at all. But that will improve as he gets older. He's got that opportunity for more minutes if George leaves, but I don't really think that he is an excellent fantasy option.
No, probably not. The one thing that I would say maybe makes him draftable in like 20 team leagues is if Paul George leaves, he's going to be the starter. I do think that there is a little bit of upside to him just because he's so athletic of a player. Like if you watch him play just some of the YouTube clips of the dunks and stuff like that, it seems like he's somebody who should be able to find his way into some defensive stats if he was given extended minutes. With that said, we saw extended minutes from some this year, and it didn't really amount to anything.
He's very skinny, he's very slight, and that can cause some defensive issues. But you're right, he should be able to at least get some steals. But yeah, playmaking, assist-wise, rebound-wise, I'm never holding him. To me, he's like a taller sort of Nick Young in that regard. He just is not going to do anything in those other areas and be able to create. But the opportunity could be there for him next season. It could also go to Alex Abrines, who's 24 years of age. He played 15 minutes per game, and it was a really disappointing year for Abrines. I thought he had an opportunity to step forward. They needed some bench production, and at times he was able to do it, but he was bothered by a groin injury, shot 38% from three. But again, like Ferguson, what does he do outside of shoot threes and score? Like, he just doesn't contribute in any other area, and I don't know if we're going to see much change there, but he's another guy that could step into a role if Paul George goes.
Yeah, there's... I think there's also less upside for Abrines just in general because he's also 24 years old and no real improvements from him from year one to year two. He was basically the exact same player that he was in his sophomore season. He's a nice three-point shooter. He spreads the floor, so they're going to need him to play some minutes with Westbrook if Paul George leaves next year. But once again, it's hard to see how he's going to be fantasy relevant outside of streaming for three-pointers.
Corey Brewer came in late on this team and I guess filled a role and was actually fantasy relevant down the end of the season, which is something I didn't expect considering how bad he was as a member of the Lakers. Played 29 minutes in his 18 games in Oklahoma City, averaged 10 points with 3.5 rebounds and over 2 steals per game. But of course, you couldn't possibly start Robertson and Brewer together in that backcourt, and that's going to limit what Corey can do as we move forward, if they even decide to bring him back.
The idea of starting Robertson and Brewer together made me laugh just because I was thinking what Westbrook's usage rating would look like. It would just be 50? The most insane thing ever.
Yeah.
So Brewer, I think he kind of came to the team as a poor man's Roberson after Roberson got hurt. He definitely got picked up by them in part because of his connection with Billy Donovan. He played for him at Florida, which I think made him more apt to want to go after Brewer. I think Brewer is fine as a role player, but once again, it's hard to see him carving out a real niche in standard leagues unless Roberson has some setback and isn't able to come back from the leg injury. If that's not the case, I don't see Brewer playing a massive role on the team just because everything that Brewer does, Roberson does better. Roberson's also younger, and I think that it's hard to see Brewer at age 32 really making any significant improvements to things like three-point shooting, which he's never done well in his career.
No, I can't see much changing with him. We've also got Ray Felton as one of the older brigade here. He's about to turn 34. Really serviceable as a backup point guard, but not someone who's ever going to take a step forward and become this excellent guy with great upside. He is who he is, and at 34 years of age, he's going to start to decline. Patrick Patterson was a guy they brought in the offseason, and he was terrible this season. Battered a knee injury before he came across, and he's 29 years of age, and there's a concern that that knee problem might persist. He has never been a good fantasy option back from his time in Toronto, and again, I don't see much changing here, although it could be a situation where maybe he sees some extra minutes in a Paul George absence, or even if Melo decides to leave, does Patrick Patterson move in there? But he's never going to be a guy who's a good fantasy player, I don't believe, unless you have a different thought on him.
No, I don't. I actually, when they signed Patterson, I didn't think it was a bad signing, and I thought that he would be somebody who would be nice to space the floor, but it just didn't work out. He wasn't able to stay healthy last year. He wasn't particularly good he played 82 games. I guess he played more than I thought he did. But either way, he wasn't able to play a massive amount of minutes. He was only playing 15 minutes per game and was just much, much less of an impact than I thought he was going to have when they signed him.
Yeah, he wasn't. He was not good during this season. The other guys on this roster, Daniel Hamilton, Dakari Johnson, Nick Collison, who's retired, PJ Dozier, Kyle Singler, not much to talk about there. Josh Huestis saw a larger role than we've ever seen from him, but he showed some things defensively, but 30% from the free throw line is not ideal. 29% from three is poor as well. And there's just very little upside for a guy who is an unrestricted free agent, had his rookie option declined, and is already 26 years of age and showed nothing offensively. So there's a whole bunch of nothingness at the end of this bench, Greg, and that makes this a team that there's really not a huge amount more to talk about. No real up-and-coming players. Ferguson's really the only bright spark they potentially have. No first-round draft choice coming here, as well as part of the Enes Kanter trade from a couple of seasons ago. It's going to be an interesting offseason for them with Paul George and with Carmelo Anthony, but room for or avenues for improvement are fairly limited, and we could see an absolute monster 42-43% usage season from Westbrook. That is a possibility if George and Melo both leave, which seems an unlikely combination, but hey, you never know. That sort of stuff could happen. Greg, I reckon that's it on the Thunder. Give us all a plug of where they can find your Twitter account and your work out there so people can consume it.
Yeah, so guys, you can go follow me on Twitter at GErenbergDFS. I have my own podcast, the Foul Balls Podcast. It's just DFS-oriented, covering baseball every day right now, and then we get into football and basketball once that starts up. And baseball content I write for DraftKings and at rotopros.com. Everything that I do, I end up putting on my Twitter page at some time, so check it out and support it. It would be greatly appreciated.
Yep, go and follow Greg. Go and check out his podcast and leave us both a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify as well. And check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, lockedonsports.com, and, of course, Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. Greg, thank you for coming on the show once again.
Yep, for sure. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Patrick Patterson.